The mists of the future have parted a little bit, and we can see through them, and we can just barely read on a whiteboard in the distant future, driverless cars. What we know from this is it can stimulate our thought, this idea of driverless cars, and I'm going to talk not about driverless cars, but a technology which is beautiful but may have to go, and this is power steering as we know it. And it's something that we all have and all know, but we think we know but there's a lot to it that we don't know. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. In this case, the fertile ground is trying to predict what's going to happen in the future, or what we can predict and what we can't predict. So driverless cars overall is all in the media, and there's been one or two fatalities, and overall the statistics look as though they'll be shepherded in, that there'll be a safety fuel requirement, the actual expense of the car will be shared amongst several people, so you'll have one driverless car and several owners. Not in rich people, but the middle class and the lower class who want driverless cars. It will be basically a driverless Uber service that you come and pay. There's a whole lot of psychological barriers. I mean, people used to think being rich is having servants and a fox hunt from time to time and luncheon served. Although that is still a symbol of wealth, it's not whether it's desirable in our context of the future. So in the future, one wonders whether direct ownership of a car with its garaging and insurance and basic maintenance is going to be as effective as something which is a car's owned by a general company, and they driverlessly go off to report their condition on the road by computers and go off to servicing, to be diagnosed perhaps by robotic servicing. It's not only the driver who's eliminated, but the service. You could well imagine that a driverless car will drive onto a ship, and you'll get a ship load of cars picked up from various ports, and it goes to an island or a specialty place, because the need, sort of the lifetime of a car and its depreciation, it can very much vary. If it's there's no need to have it owned complete all the time, and you can afford to have a wait period to get into a mechanic. The actual theory of mechanics would change. So what will push the driverless car revolution? I don't know whether consumer want, but there'll be a couple of events which may capture it. Being able to drive a car is very much caught up on our identity of how we move forward. But if you think that having to find a park or paying for a park in terms of physical cost and land cost, and the pressure of people who want to, say, put housing where there were car parks, and do a whole lot of unusual things, will that usher in the age of driverless cars? For all these questions, I'm no expert, but I can see a whole lot of set of logic which we take for granted falling away very suddenly by market disruption. There may be other technologies which come in with it. Now, a outstanding technology is our steering, and it's got a little bit of an Australian story which has sort of left our shores, and with Bishop Engineering, and he sort of refined what was a basic concept in steering, that is, steering is basically turning a wheel and a steering rod. A camshaft moves from left to right, pushing your wheels left and right. And he worked on the Burford bombers in World War II, so you can imagine there's a lot of focus on other aspects rather than steering, armament, wind speed, flap, organising flaps, controls. It seems you could well imagine that area was not really looked at steering. And so his, I suppose, basic innovation to get going from the end of World War II was the variable camshaft. So to turn a little, while you're going at high speed, you generally want to have a large range of your wheel at high speed, because you're not going to turn all that much. You can imagine just even turning your wheels at 45 degrees is a speed which you can't go at. But then at the slower speeds, you've got this requirement to move your aircraft or your vehicle through large angles. So he had the variable pitch cam shaft. So the pitch varied, and you had a helical screw at the top. So it was a helical pitch. So the slots were at angles, and the teeth at the top at angles. So you've got your steering column. At the end of the steering column, you've got in line with the steering column, a cog. Now this cog has got a profile. This is the Bishop innovation, and that gave you variable steering. So steering in the centre, half a turn gave you 5 degrees, another turn gave you 50. That's just an example of it. And so you've got that as a fundamental thing of all cars nowadays have this variable camshaft. So if you think of previously where you just have a milling machine and it just runs in the shaft, it's put forward, you've got this complicated cog and camshaft, and you have to get up a lot of patents and ideas, I suppose, to actually manufacture this reliably and cheaply. And this obviously has to be a precision thing. It can't sort of fall apart or wear apart. And so that's what we live with all today. Now, as I sort of predict, as the steering wheel becomes less important, so say, for instance, it will be in 100 hours of travelling, say 10 minutes will be perhaps where that maximum, where the driver has to hold it. The actual investment to provide the feedback mechanically through on the psychological, so we've got a psychological view that if I turn my handle, I'm going to have to actually, that turning will eventually directly push the wheel. That there's a sort of a psychological contract. Now, if we've broken a whole lot of other contracts, psychological contracts, and move people forward for a whole lot of other reasons, we can change that. And obviously, for as you turn the wheel, it can adjust it. So it will give you that by just reading the number of degrees off turned in the wheel, looking up a chart, the number of degrees that the tyre has to go. So that's a sort of an electronic version of the variable speed, the variable feedback. And of course, as we go through, I'll just describe the next thing is power steering. And power steering is a torque meter on your wheel, on your steering column, and a torque meter is the turning force. So at some point you have a part of the steering column move more, be a bit more sensitive to your turning than the actual column, so there's a little bit of give there, and it measures the amount of give and the torque that you're applying, and it goes into basically nowadays a computer. There is a sort of a hydraulic computer that goes through. Hello, it's Cecilia. Let's finish this quickly. Applies a pressure, so there's a zero error. And you may remember this sort of idea of a of moving more to electronics with a feedback system is the basic idea of a servo. So really your steering wheel used to be a mechanical command, but now it's more of a input into servos, which actually move your tires for you. So that's an example of a servo, and we're living with it now. So that contract that we have with the tires and the steering is a very important life. It's actually changed a little bit, and we've just slipped in variable steering ratio. Most people aren't aware of that. Then we've added servos, and then we've added positive feedback. So if you take your hands off the steering wheel, there is no reason, mechanical reason, that the steering wheel wants to go forward. In a bike, that's true because there's a forward rake in the bike. So the actual wheel, your bike, is actually at a lower centre of gravity, lowers if the steering wheel is forward due to the position of the angle at which the tyres are in. This is not true. There's no forward rake in cars. And so this sensation, letting your hands off the steering wheel and the steering wheel correct to centre, is basically a fiction given to you by the engineers. There's no mechanical aspect to it. So your torque still goes, but the important thing is that your servos give a sort of a certain resistance that can be programmed to give the hydraulic fluid, steering fluid, can be changed, the look and feel of it. So as you change, increase speed in cars, in some cars the actual steering begins to be harder to move left and right. As you tend to go up at speed, you get this sensation. And again, you can have this in cars with in bikes, say if you have a reverse rake, the speed will tend to pull the steering correct. So there are ways to do it. So that's in there. Now, obviously, the torque measurement being converted to a hydraulic signal can be converted to electrical signal, so you can have an electrical torque measurement. So you can have optical fibres or strain gauges. It starts to really, really open up. Yeah, but the age of this, so gradually you've got your mechanical contract, and over time you've got hydraulic circuits and then electrical circuits, and then basically our contract with the car is changing. And the economics of a car with a steering wheel at a certain time, when there are just literally it becomes statistically insignificant that you need driver intervention, that steering wheel will be an expense which will disappear at some stage, eventually in the future. If not in 20 years, 50 years, 100 years, 200 years, it will eventually disappear. There's a whole lot of other issues that we have to sort of face in that time, as to why will people want to drive when they can get a virtualization of their office at home, and all these sorts of things. Why do people want to move, and their contract and relationships with people, how will that change with time, ownership and personal income? There's all these other factors coming up. But that's just looking at the survey. One has to realise that we are living at a transition point in history. We always are. As technology changes more quickly, we're living a transition point. But eventually this is going to change. And I suppose people's understanding of what is weak. And so it allows people to quietly remove the hydraulic circuitry, replace it with electrical circuitry. If you don't know, that's there already. If you don't know, there's a variable steering wheel to tire angle relationship that can be again controlled or varied, such that you have things which are mechanically impossible. But with electric cars and electric layouts, the actual sheer weight of your steering wheel, a steering column, so that's, you know, that's a fair number of kilograms. I should imagine that would be up to 10 kilograms your steering wheel, and it's the weight That's a fair amount to carry, and you think of that for every kilogram you have. If you can convert that into batteries, that's arranged in different types. So that's to think about. And there's this beautiful world we lived in where things were cammed, and that's the essential idea of servos. They can actually mirror or monitor the look and feel of some beautiful engineering. I mentioned before the opening of a cabinet door where it just liquidly oozes open and comes to a stop, so it's nice and heavy. And that's, although the actual servo components can be very, very light, it's they've just programmed in an electronic function for it. So although this may be a technology which you and I, if you tried to do it, would be fraught with problems, the fact that it's going to be in millions of vehicles, and those vehicles can report back. So I should quickly say before closing, one of the safety features of aircraft is that every engine reports wirelessly via the internet its state, no matter where it is in the world. So they've got, basically, they have a laboratory, but they've got a huge flying laboratory, and so they can see a engine behave a little bit unusually, and they can pull that aircraft down and have a look at it. Well within its window of a floor, they can actually start to look for it. So similarly with cars, as they become parts of the Internet of Things, again, of course, there's a risk of hacking and all that type of stuff, but there's all these sorts of things happening, and it's probably a time to reflect about these things and whether you teach power steering to students or even talk about it, because it's going to disappear before they enter. It's a sort of an ancient idea, like talking about dial telephones or landlines and things like that. That's Peter Hill Explains doing this podcast. Keep on doing science, and in this case, thinking science and thinking how science can be taught. Thanks for listening.